Here's the question. Why did the swag man jump into the billabong? So as not to be caught by the police officer who was coming to get him, right? Remember what he says? You'll never catch me. You'll never take me alive, said he. That's why the swagman jumped into the billabong. He'd taken a sheep. The police had come. Down came the troopers. One, two, three. If you're not Australian, you're like, what is this guy talking about right now? And he didn't want to get locked up. Doesn't want to lose his freedom. And so what does he say? You know, this is part of us, right? He would rather die than lose his freedom. He suicides. He jumps because he'd prefer to die than lose his freedom. Now, do you see this? That's who you are if you're an Australian. This is deep down inside every one of us. And I'm looking at Justin somewhere who's French. It's their French motto. I'm sitting with so many Americans at our church right now looking at you, Jen. It's part of your national anthem as well. It's part of our unofficial anthem and our national anthem. Now that's, you know, we long for freedom. We fight for freedom. We resist anything which might take our freedoms away. There's nothing more important to us than our freedom. Now let me get a little bit more inaccessible. Malcolm Turnbull, many years ago, he was talking about freedom on Late Line, and this is what he said. It's on your outlines on page 2. I've lost mine. Can I have that, Josh? And this is what he says. There's this old sort of regime telling people how to live their lives. And by that, he means the church and the government. He says that's a problem. He says that old regime is running out of time. Australians, they want to be free. They want to have independence. They want to have choice. Now, he says, there are some people that distrust human nature, and they believe that people won't make the right decisions and that others should make those decisions for them. We, his political party, we are on the side of respecting individual judgment and respecting individual choices. Now, do you hear what he's saying there? He's actually saying that Christianity is, in his mind, the enemy of personal freedom. In Western culture, that's the way we think of Christianity. It's the enemy. It's a constraint placed upon us. That you would have to keep a certain bunch of rules in order to earn God's favor. Now, that's a political kind of way into the subject. Let's get a little bit more accessible. A couple of years ago, there was a movie that Disney made called Frozen, right? And my daughters went to see it. They came back with the CD, and I was competing in a triathlon out at Orange at the time. And for the 4-hour journey all the way to Orange and for the 4 hours all the way back, we listened to nothing else and sang with Elsa. It's time. I'm not going to sing. I was trying to work up my confidence to do it this morning. I was even sitting at my desk singing, but I'm like, nah, I can't do it. It's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. I'm free. Do you hear that? She's saying exactly the same thing as the Australian Prime Minister said, which is that Christianity, with all its rules, it's the enemy of personal freedom. So here's the question. Does a relationship with Jesus Christ ultimately impede your freedom or help your freedom? And what we're going to see is it does a little bit of both, and that's a great thing. So stick with me. Now, every week as a church, we have the habit of opening a part of the Bible to hear, not just from me, but to hear from God what He has to say. And Joe just read for us John chapter 8. And if you got your outline or there's Bibles in your pews, open that up. And if you look down at sentence 36 there, Jesus says this. He says, if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. Now that tells you something about Jesus, doesn't it? That He is interested in our freedom. That was, when I was growing up Christian, I didn't think He was. He is deeply interested in our freedom. Now what is His view of freedom? We'll come down to verse 31. Let's look at the context. He's talking to people around Him and He says, verse 31, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples, and then you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. One of the most famous statements Jesus made. Now, the people who first heard this, they probably had the same experience as we have when we read it. We read it. Jesus is saying he's going to set us free. From what? We're not slaves. See, that's what they say, verse 33. We're Abraham's descendants. We've never been slaves of anyone. How can you say you'll set us free? Now, what's incredibly ironic about this is they knew their nation had been slaves in Egypt, then in Babylon, and right now, politically, they are under the boot of Rome. But, on the other hand, they had asserted themselves. They hadn't lost their cultural identity. It's as though they were saying, you know, they may make us pay their taxes, they may take our lives, but they will never take our freedom. All right, it's a sermon on freedom. Got to get Braveheart in there somehow. But that's kind of what they're saying. Doesn't matter what's going on the outside. We are free on the inside, even though Rome is our overlord. But Jesus says, you're wrong. You're enslaved. And it's just as offensive to them as it is as I talk to my friends about Jesus and I say, you're actually enslaved. And they say, what are you talking about? I'm not enslaved. I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing. And there we see the clash of definitions between Jesus' definition of freedom and our world's view of freedom. The Oxford English Dictionary, it defines freedom like this. It says, freedom is the state of being free from constraint or control. So here's a helium balloon. If I let go of it, it'd float up. But I put some kind of barrier over the top of the balloon. So it's constrained, there's a constraint, it's not free. But if I remove that constraint and let it go, then it is free. That's the definition our world has for freedom. It's the ability to do what you want without any constraint. Now that definition is different from Jesus' definition. That isn't the Bible's definition of freedom. And what I want to do with the rest of our time is, and I'm going to allow time for questions at the end, what I want to do is I want to look at how that definition is completely unworkable. Western culture's view of freedom, it doesn't work. That's the first thing we're going to do. Then we're going to look at Jesus' definition of freedom, and actually I'm going to show you how it does work. And then thirdly, I want to talk about how Jesus actually frees us. Western culture's definition of freedom doesn't work. Jesus does, and how he frees us. So firstly, why is Western culture's view of freedom, why is it unworkable? Well, it doesn't work because it misunderstands the nature of life and reality itself. It misunderstands how human beings thrive in certain environments and shrivel and break down in other environments. And the classic illustration of this is of a fish, right? There are two things which make water the perfect environment for fish, and that is their gills and their fins. Their gills make water a place where they can breathe in oxygen, because their gills, they do something with that, right? I don't know what, but it's crazy. So that's the first thing, right? The second thing a fish has is they have, what do they have? Fins, that's it. And which make them able to move through water, but not through land, right? So imagine you're a fish and there you're with your mates and you say to them, ah, I'm so sick of being constrained by all this water around me. Look at all those humans over there sunbaking on the beach, dancing and playing sport. Gee, I wish I could be on the beach. And so one day you're sitting down and you're watching Ellen on television, and there she goes on one of her rants, you know, don't let anyone tell you how to be you. Don't let anyone tell you what you can or can't do. You've got to find your own way in life. So filled with all this newfound confidence, you jump out of the water and you slowly die on the sand. Now what's going on there? Reality's what's going on there, isn't it? Reality imposes itself on fish and on human beings, and we see that freedom isn't just doing whatever you want to do. That's a stupid definition of freedom. Because there are some things that if you do, they will kill you. That's not freedom. Freedom, according to the Bible, is living according to your nature and your design. Fish are designed to live in water. That's where they're most free. Okay? Fish thrive in certain environments and they break down in others, and so do humans. True freedom, therefore, is honoring your design. It's honoring your nature, and it's becoming what you were created to be. You are not free just to do whatever you want to do. You get the best freedom when you're actually willing to take on and embrace those constraints which fit your design. Now notice, for a fish, it does have constraints. Water, it's a constraint. Can't live outside of water. But when is a fish most free? It's when it's swimming through a channel, chasing a smaller fish, right? When it honors its constraints, that's when it's most free. When are humans most free? When we understand our nature, our design. Now, imagine a man in his 60s who loves to eat just rich food. But he also has grandchildren. He loves to spend time with his grandchildren. And one day he goes into the doctor, annual checkup, and the doctor says, look, unless you severely restrict your diet right now, you're going to die of a heart attack. You've got to cut out certain things from your diet, get exercise. You've got to restrict yourself. Otherwise, you're going to die. And at that point, that man, he's got two competing freedoms, doesn't he? He's got the desire for food, and he's got the desire to be with his family. And he would be an idiot to say, you know what, I'm not letting anyone tell me how to live. I'm not letting, freedom is being what I want to do with no external constraint. I'm just going to eat whatever I want. He will die, and he will miss out on the freedom of living with his grandchildren. Now come back to what Jesus says in verse 31. Open it up there again, look down. Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, you really are my disciples, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. You see that in order to be free, we need to know the truth about our nature. That's why Jesus' teaching sets us free. He teaches us about the nature of life, about the way God designed us to be. And he doesn't teach us to hinder our freedom, but so that we would be truly free. That's why the truth would set us free. When we're living according to our design, according to the truth of our design, then we're free. Now let me illustrate this. The Bible essentially says, although it isn't a book of commandments, it's actually a story, it's a narrative, and come and talk to me, come to Christianity Explored if you'd like to explore that more. It's not a book of commandments, but God does give us his commandments in there. He says, don't lie, don't be selfish, don't murder. And basically, these commands, where do they come from? They come from our designer. And therefore, to go against them isn't to enjoy life, it's to violate our own nature. It's to lose freedom, just like the person who's eating the wrong foods ends up in hospital. So, for example, the Bible says this. It says, don't bear a grudge. The Bible says, God, you've been made in God's image. He's naturally a forgiving person. Therefore, you ought to forgive those who wrong you. That's a restriction. It's not designed to enslave you. It's designed to free you. But here's the problem. In the short run, that's not going to feel so good. In the short run, it feels great to hate people. In the short run, when people have wronged you, it feels really good to pay them back. But in the long run, it'll damage your health. It'll damage not just that relationship, but other relationships as you slowly lose the ability to trust others and to commit to them. You see what's happening? You are if you refuse to obey God's command to forgive others, You're not just disobeying a command, you're going against the grain of your own nature. You're violating your design, and that will enslave you. You'll be like a fish trying to dance on sand. So here's the thing, our world says freedom is doing whatever you want without any constraint. But you're not free to do whatever you want without constraint. That's not how freedom actually works. You get the best freedom when you're willing to honor your design and even submit to those restrictions which create an environment in which you can thrive. And that's what God's commands do. So that's the first thing. That's how the world's view of freedom, it just is unworkable. Do whatever you want without restrictions doesn't work. Let's look at Jesus' definition then, and let's test this and see if it works. If a fish is free when it honors its design and is free to do what it's designed to do, so too us. So the question is, well, what is it that human beings are designed to do? And the Bible's answer to that question is to love. That's what you've been created to do, to love others, to love God, and to be loved in return. That's the meaning of life. It's at the very heart of the universe. And here's the thing, the idea that freedom is just my will be done, the absence of restraints, no right, no wrong, no rules for me, I'm free. The minute you get into a love relationship, and the deeper you get into it, and the more intimate you get into it, the more wonderful it gets, the more freedom you have to give up. That's true, isn't it? I've done 3 weddings every Friday in January so far, and at each one I say, what will keep you guys together is if you are willing to give up your freedom for one another. So let's just say you start, you get into a relationship, and already, first thing is, you're not allowed anymore just to go on a simple road trip with your mates without asking permission, right? And we can call that bad names, but that's actually the reality of how a relationship works. And so you want to go on a relationship, you've got to check, and you say, you know, I'm going on a road trip, that's what I'm going to do. And she says, what does she say? No. That wouldn't be very convenient for me right now. I've got to work dinner and you've got to come to it. You know, how do you respond to that? Well, sorry, I've got to be free. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. I'm free to do whatever I want without any constraints. If that's what you'd say to her, what's she going to say back to you? This thing called a relationship is simply not going to work. We're breaking up. Because basically, in order, am I hitting a raw nerve for someone? I don't know what you're laughing about, Anna. Where are we at? Basically, in order to be in a love relationship, that's what it means. You make sacrifices for the other. You adjust for them. You change for them. You lose your freedom for them. And rather than that enslaving you, when someone loves us and we love, that's the moment we feel most free, isn't it? When we're in a relationship, I'm not just talking about romantic relationship, but friendships. You got a mate who'd do anything for you. It'd cost him anything just to help you out. It would inconvenience him to help you move. That's genuine, and that's the most freeing experience in the world, isn't it? What do you create? What is your design? You were designed to love, to give up your freedom, but in doing so, you will find your freedom. That's the great paradox of Christianity. You try and hold on to your freedom, you won't be free. You give up your freedom for others, you will find freedom. Now, let me quote you, not yet, Joel, but John Stott was probably the most influential Bible teacher of the 20th century. Grab his books, incredible Bible teacher. He was located in the middle of London, an Anglican minister. There aren't many cool Anglican ministers. He's one of them. So I've got to keep cheering those guys when I quote them. And he says this. It'll come up. It's a little bit small, and it's very long, but it's completely profound. He says this. True love places constraints on the lover. For love is essentially self-giving. And this brings us to a startling Christian paradox. True freedom is freedom to be my true self as God made me and meant me to be. And God made me for loving, but loving is giving. Therefore, in order to be myself, I have to deny myself and give myself. In order to be free, I have to serve. In order to live, I have to die to my own self-centeredness. In order to find myself, I have to lose myself in loving. True freedom, then, is the exact opposite of what many people think it is. It's not freedom from all responsibility to God and others in order to live for myself. That is bondage to my own self-centeredness. Instead, true freedom is freedom from my silly little self in order to live responsibly in love for God and for others. You know that to be true. That's Jesus' definition, to love, that is to be most free. Therefore, the world's definition, just do whatever you want without it doesn't work. You won't experience freedom by following that. In fact, you've got to find the right constraints, the right environment, the right constraints. You've got to give up your freedom in order to actually be truly free. That's Jesus' definition. Thirdly and finally, well then, how does he set us free? Come back down to verse 34. Jesus says this. He goes on and he says, verse 34, "Very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin." Jesus comes back and he says, you think you're free, but you're not at all. There's a deeper slavery, and anyone who thinks they are, anyone who sins is a slave of sin. You know, as humans, we make very strange choices. We make choices in life that are tragically strange. We long to be free, and we imagine that the thing which is keeping us from freedom is authority. That authority is an external constraint which would hinder our freedom. And so we throw off authority, imagining that if only I could get rid of constraints in my life, then I'd be free. And so in throwing away authority, here's the thing, Jesus says, we actually subject ourselves to a worse kind of slavery, which is a slavery to our own selfishness. You might say to me, well, you know what? I'd rather be ruled by myself than have someone else rule me. That doesn't, Toby, sound at all freeing. Here's a thought experiment. Just look very briefly to the person on your left and on your right. You've got two people, and you look at them. Okay, great. Now, would you let either of them run your life? No, I'm gathering not. If you're married to them, you're like, I wish they weren't running my life. But now, here's the thing, right? You just looked at them and you said, there's no way they're capable running my life. But you've got two people now looking at you saying the same thing about you. What does that say about you? It says that actually you're completely unfit for the job of running your life. You're completely unqualified. No one else in the world would ever have you run their lives. Why do you think you are so competent to be able to run your own life yourself? Do you see that? We are blinded to the reality that actually we're not so good at running our lives, and yet we think that, no, there's no one else capable of that job. Here's the second thing, and I'll finish that statement. The only person who is God. Don't let them run it. Don't let the books you read, don't let that dictate how you'd live. Listen to your designer. He made you. True freedom is living according to your design. Listen to him. Okay, the second thing, though, is the very nature of ruling yourself. Ruling yourself is your life starts to turn and become all about yourself. The fact is, you and I, we were made for something greater. We were made to swim, not just wiggle on the sand dying. We were made for something good and wonderful and noble and great, to live not just for our own world, but for the good of others, to love. And whenever we stop living according to our design, we shrink, we shrivel, we become small-minded, and we become enslaved to our own passions and desires. We cut ourselves off from God and we live in the prison of self-centeredness. Now just think about this slavery with me for a second. Anyone who sins, Jesus says, is a slave to sin. I'm not a slave. I'm not a slave of anything, yeah? Well, have you ever said or done things you wish you hadn't? I do every week. I say things, and I'm just, well, why the heck did you say that, Toby? I do things, and I wish I didn't do them. I'm doing things, and I wish I wasn't doing it, even in the moment, and there's this war within me that's going on. Every one of us acts in ways that fail our own standards, and Jesus says it's because we're enslaved to a power called sin, to yourself, to your self-broken rule. We refuse God and His constraints. We don't let Him rule us. We say, I'm the only one fit to rule my life, but we become enslaved in a small and petty world. Now, let me just show you this in another song. One of the most famous songs about freedom is Mick Jagger's song, I'm Free. And if you remember the lyrics, it goes like this. I'm free to do what I want any old time, so love me, hold me, love me, hold me. He goes on, I'm free any old time to get what I want, so love me, hold me, love me, hold me. He says, I'm free to choose who I please any old time, so love me, hold me, love me, hold me. Now, ladies, who would want to be married to a man like that? Who was free to please whoever he wants any old time? Now, I want to marry someone who is constrained by my interest, who is concerned about me and makes me a priority in their life, and isn't just free to do whatever they want any old time. Do you see how that view of it destroys us? It is what's wrong with the world right now. Jesus, he labels this as the problem which is destroying our world. We think this is the most important thing in life, to do whatever we want without any constraints. And Jesus says that'll kill you. It's destroying your life. It's destroying our world. And it wraps you up in this self-built prison of selfishness. Sure, it might feel good for a little while. You can fool yourself that you're free. But in a couple of years, it will kill you. It'll make you small and stagnant and shrivel. Now, what I'm trying to say, therefore, is that when we throw off God, thinking that's the way to freedom, everyone is saying that is the way to freedom, throw off God, don't have any external constraint, what we end up with is a life which is profoundly broken. Profoundly broken. True freedom is the freedom to live as we were made to live. Under God's rule, living according to His design, finding those restrictions which create the environment in which we're most free to operate, submitting to the truth, living a life of self-giving love. True freedom is to be constrained to do that. It's to have God take us somewhere noble and good. That's what he's saying. You were created for that. And Jesus says, right at the end, if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. He's saying, that's you've been made to live for me. Now, how did he actually do this? How did he pull it off? What did he do that actually frees us? Well, his whole life was centered on going to the cross. Even at his birth, someone came along and said, this kid's going to die for the salvation of the world. His death was the means by which he frees us. And at his death, he does two things. He pays the penalty and he breaks the power. He pays the penalty of sin that my rejecting God's authority has brought, a penalty which is death and enslavement. When Jesus went to the cross, he absorbed your debt. He paid it for you. your life lived just pursuing your freedom away from God's design, there's a penalty for that, and he pays that in death and blood on the cross so that God would be able to say to you, I forgive you. I accept you. Come home. You don't have to pay me back. It's all right. Come back. I'll wash your clean. That's the first thing he does. He pays the penalty. But then secondly, he breaks the power of selfishness in our lives, because at the cross, he dies enabling the Spirit to come into our hearts and change us and empower us from the inside so that we would happily live under the rule of Christ himself. If you're a Christian, you're now enabled to please God and live a life of freedom. It's incredible. That's the goal God has for you. He set it up so that you can do that. Now, let me illustrate with probably my favorite illustration in the world. I gave it just before Christmas. It's about dogs, three different types of dogs that you might meet. And the question I'm going to ask you is this dog happy and free? Okay, the first dog, some dogs, they're like terrorists, right? Laws unto themselves, roaming garbage bins, biting people and mounting anything that it sees. Is that dog a happy dog? No, a little bit louder. Is that a happy dog? No, okay. Other dogs are chained to the post. They want to get away, but they can't. Is that dog a happy dog? Can we have a bit more volume? Is that dog a happy dog? No, okay. Other dogs walk by the side of their master. No need for a leash because they don't want to go anywhere their master isn't, because they love their master and they trust their master and therefore they'll obey their master. Is that dog a happy dog? Yes, very good. That's the picture of a Christian. We obey God not because there's some external constraint, not because we fear, but because we trust him. Why do we trust him? Because he gave up his life in love for us. If he gave up his life for us, why would he be commanding us to do things which weren't for our good? Second year university, I hit 18. I had all this newfound freedom in first year university. And I walked away from Jesus for a long time because I just thought God was out to enslave me, to make my life smaller. I got to second year university, went to a conference. It was about the cross, why God sent his son to die. And it was there I realized that my problem with God's commandments came because I didn't trust him. And as I reflected on his death for me, I started, of course I can trust him. And the commandments became means of freedom rather than me thinking they were ways God was trying to enslave me. Now, I know that if you've just started the Christian life, it is difficult. And there are moments when it doesn't seem very freeing. And you've got to make significant changes in your life. That was my experience. But as I said more and more no to selfishness and yes to God's commandments, I felt the flooding sense of nobility and goodness and greatness and freedom, which comes from living the way God designed me to live. I want to encourage you this morning. The blood of God's very own Son was shed to set you free, to pay the penalty for what you've been doing, but also to convince you that you can trust him in what he says. Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, then you're my disciples, and then you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. I pray that that would be true in your life this week and forever. Amen.